Hello and welcome to the CBS Sports Fantasy Basketball Today podcast. I'm Chris Towers, Joe Polito.
Hey, man.
Back.
Yeah, I'm ready to talk about this election for the next 3 hours. Let's do it.
What?
Oh, no, this is a fantasy basketball podcast.
We're not touching that.
My bad.
Unless Joseph Levin wants to talk. Joseph Levin, special guest. We've got a, we're going to be talking about the Southeast Division in the NBA, and we've got a, I would say an expert.
Oh, well, I appreciate you. I appreciate you heaping praise on me right off the bat.
Yeah.
But expert, we'll see.
I'm setting expectations.
It all depends on how this goes. The people will be the judge.
You're not getting out of this with low expectations. I'm setting the bar high, and you
setting
better clear.
High. I don't know. I'm going to rise to the occasion.
This was Michael Jordan's right-hand man with the Hornets.
That's what, yeah. The hand of the Hornets, the hand of the king.
Exactly. Anytime MJ...
Hornets don't have hands. I've seen the logo. They've got like pincers, right? Or am I thinking of the actual Pokemon pincer?
It's the Jumpman hand.
Yeah.
Oh, the Jumpman hand. Okay.
Come on.
So Joseph, tell us your background.
My background.
You work for CBS Sports as a video producer.
Yes, I took a long path to CBS Sports. I'm a video producer now.
Okay.
Do a little bit of everything, basketball and fantasy football with Chris. But I started out at Florida State University working for the basketball team there when I was in school as a manager. Went from there to the WNBA for a season with the Washington Mystics as a video coordinator, video scout. I spent a season working for Lionel Hollins in Memphis as a video coordinator. And then before I came here, I spent 5 seasons in Charlotte with Michael Jordan and the crew, working for a host of head coaches in the video room.
A bunch of head coaches. So you were there at the bottom?
Can I do trivia with you real quick?
Sure.
In my years there,
I
started in 2009, 2010 was my first season. Can you name the four? Four head coaches I worked for. It could be five, and I might be forgetting, but I'm going to say four.
Are we doing a feud style, family
no,
feud?
No, I'm going to say no, that I can't. So go ahead, Chris.
Larry Brown was there, right?
Yes.
Okay. Steve Clifford.
Yes, that was my most recent.
That's your boy.
That is my guy.
Was Larry Drew a coach for them?
No.
No? Yeah, that's it. That's all you got? Those two.
You don't, well...
Who was the coach?
I'm trying to figure out who the coach.
I'll give you a hint. One of the years we won 7 games with him as our head coach.
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Paul Silas.
Oh yeah. Okay.
And then after Paul, we had another 1 year and done coach. And
Many people
will not remember this one. He is currently the head coach of Loyola Marymount.
He was like Brad Stevens before Brad Stevens, right? Wasn't he thought to be like a good, you know, like a
I'll try to, since this is going to be out to the masses, I'll bite my tongue on that one. But it was Mike Dunlap.
That was it. Mike Dunlap. Yeah. So you were in Charlotte for a while. You know, you worked with some of the current players. So we'll get your perspective on Charlotte when we get to them. I think we can just jump in. You know, it's obviously the first couple of days of training camp have gone through. I wrote something on CBSSports.com talking about training camp storylines that I am or am not excited about. Last week's podcast, Chris Bosch, doesn't sound like he's going to play this season. That's
a bummer.
A real bummer just from, you know, even beyond the basketball
stuff. Just as a fan.
He's such a fun player to root for, and it's really crappy that he's not going to be playing for the Heat this season. Ben Simmons has apparently added 33 pounds.
That is...
of pure muscle. Has to be.
Apparently.
They're never like, he added it mostly in his midsection. It's basically all lard.
It's an inner
tube. Just a tire going around.
He didn't play in March, so yeah, I mean, maybe he, after they decided not to play in the NIT, they just
hooked him up with IV got after it. Peanut butter.
He just got after it.
I'm going to go ahead and question that one. Okay. I'm also going to question that Anthony Davis actually grew an inch. Another training camp storyline. Isaiah Thomas eating his vegetables now.
Oh, fair. So that's good.
That's good
for him.
Him and I have something in common. We both didn't eat vegetables until we were like 26. But you know, beyond that, there's not a ton to talk about from training camp so far. Greg Monroe coming off the bench. We'll cover that when we get to the Milwaukee Bucks. But for now, let's talk about the Southeast Division. We'll start with your Charlotte Hornets, Joseph.
Sure.
You're wearing your Charlotte Hornets hat.
It's
got the Jumpman logo on it. So you are our resident Charlotte Hornets expert. They won just like two other teams in this division, 48 games last season. It was kind of a mess in the Southeast Division at the top. They only is it right that they only added Marco Bellinelli? Am I accurate on that?
Yeah, but I think personally, I think it's a great addition. I watched him play for Tom Thibodeau when he was in Chicago. Very similar type of coach. He could do a little bit of everything. He can run the point if you need him to. Yeah. He can come. He plays off screens great. He's a great shooter.
Yeah,
they need that.
Struggled with his shooting last year in Sacramento. Everybody does.
Right. Yeah. I'll give a guy a pass for at least 1 year after he gets out of Sacramento to see what he can do. But I think that playing for Coach Clifford in Charlotte is going to be great for him and great for them to plug him in wherever they need him off the bench.
They did lose three rotation players in the offseason. Courtney Lee went to New York. Jefferson.
Sorry, they added Roy Hibbert. So
that's right for him. Mm. Yeah, forgot that. Yeah.
So yes, they only added Marco.
Is Hibbert going to be third on the depth chart or second?
Well, we'll get to Roy Hibbert.
We're
going to have a discussion.
He's
about
on
him.
The rundown.
Well, actually, no. So sorry, they added a few more guys, okay. But. I mean, Ramon Sessions.
Yeah.
Brian Roberts is back.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Brian Roberts didn't finish the season with them.
No. Well,
he was in Portland.
Yeah. He got traded to Miami.
Yeah.
And I texted him and said, congrats. I live down here. Hit me up.
And oh, my God. You guys planned a beach party and everything?
No,
and he's
I hit him up.
Sorry.
I texted him and I said, dude, congrats on the move down to Miami. I can't wait to see you down here. And then before he responded, he got traded to Portland.
You were like, so.
And I was like, oh, man, that's not. He probably thinks I was messing with him. Oh.
So they lost Courtney Lee to the Knicks. They lost Al Jefferson to the Pacers. Jeremy Lin to the Nets. Those are, one starter, one guy who was a former starter, another guy who was a big part of the rotation in Jeremy Lin. The fantasy storylines that I want to go through with this team, Kemba Walker took a big step forward last season. Not so much in the per-game numbers because he's always been able to contribute decent scoring, decent passing, but the shooting from all over the floor. Three-point shooting got to about 37%. Finishing at the rim, he'd always been really bad at that. He got a lot better last season. The question that I think fantasy owners have about him, because it's only 1 year, was that a fluke? Or do you think there was something about the way the team – do you think it was Nicholas Batum or something about the way the team generated their offense that made things easier?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of those things. I think having another wing player who could handle the ball in Batum and facilitate and just be a threat.
Yeah.
They never really had that like Batum. And I think going away from Al – Last year, as the focal point of the offense, which really crowded your spacing, and it was hard for Kemba to get into the paint, and dish out and then space and get his shots. I think the faster pace, playing a little smaller with Cody and Frank at the five, really helped. So I expect him to have the same type of year shooting the ball, if not better.
It makes me think of the way I think Paul George can play this season.
Yes.
In Indianapolis.
Indiana
Pacers.
We'll call them the Pacers.
The Pacers.
In
the Pacers.
A lot of the time in his first few seasons, there were a lot of situations where he ended up, Al Jefferson couldn't get something going in the post, so they'd kick it back out to Kemba. There's 5 seconds left on the shot clock.
Yep.
He does that crazy off-dribble crossover thing, leaves the defender. But he's taking a contested 16-footer.
Yep.
There were way too many times when the offense just bogged down to that. So I do agree. Nicholas Batum serving as a secondary point guard for them in the offense just made Kemba's life so much easier.
And Bellinelli, like you said, he's just a guy who thrives with the ball in his hand. He's not a huge assist guy, so it's not like he's running floor general or anything.
Right. Yeah.
So when he has the ball, he's pretty much looking to score, and if everybody's got their attention on him, then it's...
Right, and if you look at it, like what they did, this is never going to be a team to me that's going to be a high scoring team because they're defensive minded. But they played faster, and no one on that team averaged 4 assists last year. So no one's really averaging too many assists a game, but they're moving it around. And I think having floor spacers and just playing that way, Marvin had a really good year for them last year.
Awesome.
He was huge. I mean, him. Just knocking down shots.
Yeah.
I mean, having
just
that four
in the corner to space.
The difference there is like when I was there, Josh McRoberts was the four, and he can shoot, but he's not, he didn't want to shoot, and he wasn't consistent. Like, having that consistent four who stretches the floor for you, and Cody can step, Cody and Frank can step out to 19 feet. So having three, four, five guys on the floor who can shoot takes so much pressure off Kemba. And I, and we'll see it again this year. I mean, 23 points a game essentially last year. I don't know if he'll do much more than that, but I could see it being right around there.
Okay. The one, we've mentioned Kemba Walker, we've mentioned Nicholas Batum at the two, we've mentioned Marvin Williams at the four, Cody Zeller at the five. That's probably four-fifths of the starting lineup. The one guy we haven't mentioned so far is the one that's kind of, he's both an enigma, and it feels like everyone's just decided at, I think, 22, that Michael Kidd-Gilchrist just is what he is. Do you think he has room left to grow as an offensive player?
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's a small sample size, but in seven games last year, he was 3-for-7 from three.
Yeah.
Now, let's take that for what it is.
Basically the smallest sample size.
Hey, he took 1 3 a game, he made three of them for a guy that, if you would have watched him 2 years ago, you would have, he didn't take a three.
That's what I think a lot of times now in the league, being willing to shoot is like one of the biggest hurdles to climb. So
definitely.
Like you said with McRoberts.
No, just even be, that's why Josh was a good stretch four, not because he was consistently hitting threes, but the threat of him of a guy knowing that he could shoot.
It's a psychological
that
thing.
It is. Yeah. He only hit three-pointers in seven games last season, like you said. That matched his career total for the first 3 years of his career. Like you said, in 2014-15, he didn't attempt a single three-pointer in 480
And that was my
shots.
Last year in Charlotte, and that was intentional. That was when Mark Price was there as the shooting coach, and they broke down his shot, and they built it back up to something that was going to be not great, and it'll never be great.
Yeah. There
but as a catch-and-shoot guy, I mean, if he, it's like you said, like Joe said, if he can be respectable, it changes his eye. And he averaged 12-8 almost in before he got hurt two years ago. 12-8. I mean, there was only I think 10 guys that averaged double doubles in the NBA last year, and then two guys who were pretty close, Kevin Love and Gortat. So 12-8 is pretty. I mean, those are big numbers. And if he can knock down a couple more shots, I mean,
if he can hit 50 threes over the course of the season, if he can give you the one thing that you want to see with him, because he's so long, because he's so athletic, the defensive numbers aren't there yet. His career average is set 0.7 blocks, 0.6 steals. It's weird that he doesn't get more defensive numbers. Is that intentional based on the system? Is that just he's not an overly aggressive defender?
No, I think, I think also when he's on the floor, he's guarding the best player on the floor.
Yeah, his job seems
he's
to
not
be
taking,
more...
He's not there to take chances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's not guarding around the rim as much.
Yeah.
He's there
to make the other guy
to guard...
take a hard shot.
To hound. And he's also the, I guess you could call it the quarterback of the defense, so to speak. He's calling everything. I mean, he's the one who's telling everyone. He's the one who knows. You know, usually that's your center that's playing behind everybody and is calling out what's happening, or you're big in the pick and roll. But Mike sees everything on the floor. So he's one of those guys that really makes an impact defensively without those numbers. But I think where his numbers show defensively is his rebounding. I mean, his rebounding for a wing player when he was healthy is
you know, with,
crazy.
With Cody Zeller, Frank Kaminsky, Marvin Williams, likely to be the front court rotation. And
there's rebounds to be had.
Yeah, MKG might get some time at the four as well. Spencer Hawes and Roy Hibbert aren't strong rebounders when they get on the floor. There's definitely an opportunity for him to have, 8-9 rebounds per game, which can help you out at the small.
So you see him as a sleeper, Kidd-Gilchrist?
I definitely do. I've done some drafts so far where he hasn't gotten drafted, and I think in a head-to-head points league where you need volume, that's not so much what he's going to give you, because you're hoping Michael Kidd-Gilchrist can help you fill out the box score. He's not going to be a star, but as a fourth forward, I think there is some value there, some sleeper potential later in the draft.
The interesting thing about what I'm looking at with their team now is like Batum. I mean, maybe they start him at, shooting guard, but it kind of seems like he's more of a small forward, and like maybe they shift to that where Bellinelli and Batum play with Walker a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that might take a lot of pressure off of Kidd-Gilchrist to be able to be that guy, like you said, who does kind of the little things for them instead of, coming out of college, he was kind of profiled to be like the man, the scorer guy. But he's got plenty of ball handling.
I think if Mike is healthy, I would think the intention last year was to play Batum at the two and have Mike start at the three. And I think if he's healthy, it also takes a lot of pressure off Nick. Because Batum is a good defender, but I think he might be a little overrated as an individual defender. But if Mike's not there, then Batum is the guy defending the best player on the other team. If he doesn't have to do that, and he can not rest, but stay out of foul trouble.
Well, he can use his energy on offense more.
Yeah, so I think it could help both of them. It could help Batum, who had a great year last year. Yeah. I wasn't expecting it to be that good. But I think not. And Mike can handle. He can pass. He can take it coast to coast on a defensive rebound. He finds guys. He's a smart player. I think you're right. I think he's definitely a sleeper. I mean, I think he's even more of a daily sleeper.
Yeah.
A guy, if you can figure out, you know, a matchup, like, he's going to be cheap a lot.
Yeah, and you're,
some
and
team
you're,
with an old small forward who's not going to get up and down the floor with him.
Yeah. Or just even in a fast-paced game. Like
a fast-paced game.
I mean, I think this year, if anybody's playing against the Rockets, you play them.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be a high-scoring game.
He's going to enjoy being in a track meet.
Exactly.
And I would say, you know, when you're looking at matchups, something like that, a team like New Orleans maybe, the team that doesn't have a strong wing scorer, they're going to be starting Solomon Hill. Yeah. That's going to free him up. He's not going to have to focus.
Lance.
Yeah, they're not going to have to. He's not going to be guarding Anthony Davis, so they're going to be able to move him around. He's going to have a little more opportunity there. I do the other sleeper situation that I think this team has is the center position. Cody Zeller is going to be the starter. What do you expect from Cody? Just kind of the same that we've seen from him. He's kind
just,
of
he's just not a stats guy, right?
He's 9 points.
I would stay away from the center. Yeah. I would stay away. Well, I guess Marvin Williams could get you some numbers here and there, but I would try to avoid the forward center position for the Hornets for the most part.
Marvin Williams is one guy in rotisserie, especially where you get the categories because he did block.
He blocked
a shot
shots
and a half
from the perimeter
per game last year.
I was hyping him like 2 years ago, and he didn't pan out. And then last year, he kind of was what I wanted him to
now,
be.
What,
2 years
did
ago.
He? But did now the other question I had with him was, did he get a new contract
this
year?
He did 4 years, $60 million, I believe.
So he's going to chill out now.
Well, I believe in that. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
A lot of fantasy players take stock in that.
But I mean, hey, last year was a contract year, and he's not getting younger. He needed it. He needed to get that deal. He got it. Now, it remains to be seen what he does this year, but I think last year was probably one of his better years in the NBA, right? I mean,
oh, definitely.
But I think that happens with coaches like Coach Cliff, honestly. And I know I'm biased.
Yeah.
But in that Thibodeau mold,
he takes
the guys that he's given and he gets the most out of them.
Yeah.
And they love playing for him, so I think he could still be good, but he did get
until
paid.
Roy
he did
Hibbert
get
just takes over the team and
Roy.
Know, they dump it to Roy. They just dump it to Roy, go back on defense.
It might be totally misguided, and we'll move on from Charlotte in a minute, move on to the Heat, but there's a part of me in the back of my head that thinks, you know, they built an elite defense out of Al Jefferson at the center position.
Yeah, I'd say maybe the more elite aspects were when he was off the
floor. It wasn't because of Al Jefferson, but they were able to build
it with him.
You know, he's a slow-plotting center, but he's big enough to at least be a deterrent at the rim. Roy Hibbert's actually been a good defender in the past. I don't think he was last season, and I thought he had a chance to be a fantasy sleeper in Los Angeles, and he was a total bust.
He's only good in the playoffs against LeBron.
It's all going to depend on if he's willing to try.
Yeah.
We were able to make an elite defense because Al tried. He's not a good defender, but he'll get over his body in the way. He tried. I mean, he was trying to guard in pick and rolls. He was trying to help and trap the box. He was trying to do the little things. He was never going to be great at them. But is Hibbert going to come off the bench behind Cody Zeller and Frank Kaminsky and say that he's going to play that hard all the time and also not get touched? Now, Al was getting the touches.
Yeah.
Now, remember, think about that. Now, it's a trade-off. Huh?
Yeah.
We're giving you the ball 25 times a game. Play defense.
Yeah.
You know, Roy's not touching the ball unless he gets an offensive rebound. I mean, I don't know that for a fact, but I would imagine
that would probably be the safe assumption.
I hear you, Chris, because situationally there's space for him to kind of step up and grab a role.
It also depends on how many minutes he plays.
Yeah, right? If he gets 25 minutes per game or 20 minutes per game, something bad might have happened in Charlotte, but you know, there's a chance for him to get 2 blocks per game there, is what I'm saying.
Which is valuable in categories. You can grab Bismack Biyombo in the past. You pick him up and get blocks you know you could.
We'll move on to the Miami Heat.
Oh, God.
Who, speaking of things that went poorly, the Heat had a pretty much disastrous offseason. You look at their additions. Their additions would be fine for, like, a championship contender that was filling out their bench. You know, Deion Waiters on a cheap contract, Derek Williams on a cheap contract, James Johnson's a nice player, Wayne Ellington can space the floor. Those guys are replacing Dwayne Wade, Luol Deng, Joe Johnson, Gerald Green was a rotation player, Amari Stoudemire.
Hall of Famers, it looks
Amari
like.
Stoudemire was starting. They lost 4/5 of their season-ending starting
three, potentially,
lineup.
At least.
Well, at the end of the season, they were starting Amari, Deng, Joe Johnson, Dwayne Wade, and Goran Dragic. They lost 4/5 of their starting lineup. Half of their playoff rotation's basically gone. Chris Bosh, like we said, not expected to play this season. This is going to be one of the harder teams in the league to figure out in terms of projecting what you expect from them on a night-to-night basis. You know Goran Dragic's going to have the ball in his hands. You know Hassan Whiteside's going to fill it up. Outside of that, there are a ton of question marks. And what the first thing, the biggest thing that we have to talk about with this team is on what's likely to be a bad team, where he's already been paid, and he's the star now. Is Hassan Whiteside going to be reliable? And from the outside, I don't know if there's any way any of us can answer that question, right? Because it's all about what Hassan Whiteside wants to do, right?
Yeah.
And
well, I think the Heat don't really have a choice at this point but to give him the keys to the vehicle. And, you know, Dragic has kind of established who he is as a player. He will probably statistically have a much better year than last year now that he doesn't have to share the ball with Dwayne Wade all the time. But Whiteside is kind of like the hope for the franchise at this point, so they have no choice but to.
I mean, I put down for the question of, in my little note that I made, is Hassan Whiteside reliable? And I was thinking of it from a fantasy perspective. I wrote yes, but only because somebody has to be.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're just bad. And somebody's going to have to – I mean, he's going to play 35, 40 minutes a game. Somebody's going to have to get rebounds, block shots.
Especially when you look at the front court specifically. So, like, they have a lot of, you know, kind of talented guys on the wing who can who can do some things. But when you look down low, it's like Udonis Haslem, James Johnson.
Josh McRoberts has a stress reaction in his foot. Chris Bosh is out for the season.
Yeah.
Udonis Haslem is 37 and
– James Johnson is like
– I probably have a higher vertical leap than Udonis Haslem at this point.
I think Derek Williams will get a lot of minutes at the four for them.
But even still, like, none of them are doing anything front court wise. I mean, James Johnson can block a shot or two.
Yeah.
You know, but
so
all the rebounds, all the blocks are going to
Hassan. Expectations for fantasy should be extremely high for Hassan Whiteside. You look at what he did after the All-Star break last season. He was basically a top 10 player in rotisserie because you were getting 17 points, you were getting 13 rebounds, almost four blocks. And he shot 75% at the free throw line. Now, you know, as someone who's worked with NBA players, that kind of an improvement going from like 50 to 55% to 75% overnight, does that ever stick?
I mean, you don't see it often.
Yeah.
So there's
but
not.
But you don't really see Whiteside cases that often.
Right. So that's true. Yeah. 100%. I mean, but there's not I don't think a big enough sample size for me to say that a guy can improve 20% from the free throw line, and it's I mean, I would imagine it's not going to fall off that much.
Yeah.
As long as he keeps doing his no dribble, one foot off the line, whatever that was, and whoever taught him that,
it's kind
of that was I mean, I don't know what it is, but it's like a jump
shot. To me, it makes sense because when he gets the ball, the more he does with the ball, you're like, oh my God, he's going to turn it over. This is going to be terrible.
The more he starts to dribble, the more it just kind of.
But if he just got it and put it up, it was usually a good shot. So I think
he's taking the shot that he would. He's taking it, it looks like as if he's like a rhythm jump shot instead of.
Yeah, he wastes no time.
Someone that if you want him in fantasy, you're probably going to have to take him in the second round. Are we still concerned? You know, he's played, I believe he's played like 2,000 fewer NBA minutes than Andrew Wiggins, which is crazy because he's 26. He's played fewer minutes than Giannis Antetokounmpo. All these guys that have been drafted in the last few years, he's played fewer minutes than them just because he wasn't a full-time player until midway through the year 2 years ago. He missed a bunch of time. Last year he missed, I think, 15 games, was coming off the bench. There is still a small sample size of Hassan Whiteside. How is he the riskiest potentially elite player in the NBA right now?
I think so.
Yeah,
because
I do.
when you look at what the Heat had and what they've been, the reason I think he was able to put up such, you know, historically great numbers, like bottom line, is because he represented everything they never had, and they had sort of built this system where Wade was getting shots close to the rim, Dragic was getting shots close to the rim, they didn't have space, they couldn't shoot threes, there weren't a lot of long rebound opportunities, so everything was kind of contained, and every time he got the ball, it was like right in front of the rim, whether it was an offensive rebound or on a pick and roll lob where they didn't pay any attention to him. Now, he's a focal point, and there are actually, you know, some floor spacers, some smaller guys on the court, so it'll be really interesting to see if he was kind of just a looter in a riot last year, or if he, you know, actually possesses all that talent to carry the weight of a team.
And I don't like, I don't want to keep harping on the money thing, right? But let's think about this. I think this is what makes him risky. The first month of the season, this guy, he could be the best center in the NBA statistically and fantasy, no question. But after the first month of the season, they could have one of the worst records in the NBA, and
this
that team, thing could go off the rails really
this
quick.
This team could be an
and he,
absolute
what's
disaster.
His incentive after they're if they're one of the worst teams in the league, which who knows, maybe they'll make a run and pull it together and Spo and Riley can make something happen, but the roster doesn't look that way. So if they're bad, now what's – he's never had a reputation of being the most reliable
–
Personality-wise.
It's the absolute opposite. You know, you talk to, people who knew him in Sacramento, and there's horror stories about the personality.
Well, you could see it on the court. I mean, if you go to the – I mean
– because he's not that young. Look, I mean, he kind of profiles as a young guy. He's 26.
But you can just see it, especially when you go watch in person and you see the way he interacts with his teammates on the bench in timeouts, even in, you know, coming out of timeouts, after he fouls, the way – just his –
spy language isn't great.
Just when I've scouted, and I was scouting still last year when I first got down here, when I would watch their games, it would just frustrate me because his body language, like you said, it's the word. I mean, it's just so negative.
Yeah, but fancy players get 4 blocks per
game,
12 rebounds.
Yeah, no.
27 points.
Yeah. Right, so that's why that first couple months, but if they start losing, it'll be interesting to see. That's why, he's probably the most unreliable elite player.
Really, really risky player to draft. A player who's been really disappointing, I think, for the last basically 2 seasons is Goran Dragic. The thing is, he's been disappointing, but he's had excuses. You know, the struggles in Phoenix 2 years ago, he was coming off an All-NBA season, was 13 All-NBA, was amazing. A legitimate superstar, the way he played that year. But Eric Bledsoe was hurt for most of that year, so he was kind of the guy. Eric Bledsoe's back from injury. They signed Isaiah Thomas to come off the bench, and it was just... it was a tire fire from day one there. Mm-hmm. So they trade him to Miami. All of a sudden, him and Dwayne Wade have to start feeling each other out. The team never got to play. They never got to play with Chris Bosh with that team. Last season, they've got guys in and out of the lineup. They've had so many injury issues. It's Goran Dragic and Hassan Whiteside and maybe Justice Winslow's team now. It's those two guys, though. And Goran Dragic could have a huge season, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's the perfect situation for where Goran Dragic has thrived in his career, which is being the one or two best player, putting up big numbers on a bad team.
Yeah.
And that's what this is going to be. And he's going to be in pick and rolls all day, which is where he thrives. And
when he's not, they're going to be running a lot more because his team got way younger.
And one thing to point out is Goran Dragic did start playing better towards the second half of last season. Part of that was the Heat had more spacing on the floor with Luol Deng playing the 4, Joe Johnson playing the 3. But it was also... and this gets back to the first question, if Hassan Whiteside can be reliable, because for a long time, Goran Dragic on this team struggled in the pick and roll with Hassan Whiteside. Hassan Whiteside would try to slip the screens, or he wouldn't set a hard screen. He was trying to get the ball. Hassan Whiteside, when he started coming off the bench, was actually setting hard screens and freeing Goran Dragic to get to the rim. If Whiteside's consistency wanes, that could also be a thing that impacts Goran Dragic. It's a combustible situation.
Yeah, I kind of look at it like, you know, similar in a lot of ways to when Harden teams up with Howard and they have a Trevor Ariza on the wing, you know, like a Winslow or somebody who's kind of a defender. And it's like that could have been incredible, but, you know, at times it was very much not. So it's definitely going to be interesting. I think he's a guy who thrives best in chaos. So the more... mm-hmm. They just let him cook.
An incredible player in transition.
Yeah, doesn't
have that
Just he's not a good when he has to think and be methodical, which was all the Heat did last year. That's not his game at all. When he doesn't have to think and he just feels the game and gets his layups with contact and everything, that's when he's thriving.
Yeah, I think he'll be good because he, again, it's the same reason somebody has to be good for that team. And he's not going to stop playing hard. He's not a guy that I worry that when things get rough, I think he'll still play hard and he'll still get his numbers no matter what the situation
is.
He'll
knock all his teeth out and he'll keep running.
He's going to keep playing. He's going to keep playing and he'll be good for them.
Yeah, I like taking him in fantasy just because, like he said, need. Like, I mean, you look at what, not to this extent, but Lillard, you know, high volume player on a bad team, loves to control the ball, loves to shoot. That's kind of what Dragic is in a not as talented way.
I would say he's someone that if you can get as your maybe number three point guard, or your number three guard, he's an exceptional number three guard.
It's crazy.
I'm putting out my second edition of my fantasy tiers this week, and it's basically just trying to figure out, like,
you're crying fantasy tears trying to
narrow
it down.
You need to get one of the elite point guards or one of the elite guards because the numbers that they put up are so ridiculous. But if you overload on guard, you can end up with a situation where you have three elite guards, but then the rest of your team is kind of crappy. Whereas otherwise, if you wait on guard, let's say you get Damian Lillard at the beginning of the second round, and then you can wait.
Yeah, I think I fell into that trap in our last mock where I took Lillard in either the early second, and then I took another point guard in the third. And then by the end, by like the fifth round, I'm looking, I'm like, I don't have a small forward, and there's nobody.
They look so good sitting in that draft room. Like, I had Chris Paul and Kyrie Irving. I'm like, oh my God, my team's amazing. And then you're like, holy crap, there's nothing left.
I'm like, I think Paul George will slip to, no, he was gone the next pick. Like,
And that's a situation where this Heat team could potentially provide some value at shooting guard and small forward. It just depends on
who
you know. Justice Winslow is going to play 30 plus minutes. He's going to play 30 plus minutes every night, but last year he was playing almost 30 plus minutes per night and he didn't do anything in the box score. Now had an impact as a player, made an impact, was really helpful for the Heat, but just kind of MKG-esque, where he clearly a helpful player but didn't impact the box score the way you want. And the question is specifically with Winslow, can he make that next step as a playmaker, as a ball handler? They want him running pick and rolls. They want him shooting. He's been working all offseason on his shooting. Eric Spoelstra says it looks great. We'll see. If he can, he's got a huge opportunity here. He could be a breakout star in Miami. You look at Josh Richardson. He's out for, I think, five more weeks after suffering a knee injury. But he's someone, as the season goes on, has value. Tyler Johnson has sleeper value.
Yeah, they're almost kind of bulky at, like, you know, two guard.
Yeah, that two guard. They've also got Dion Waiters. Yeah, and I think
Josh Richardson was the name. I think if he comes back healthy like he was last year and can, you know, add something to his game, which, you know, what is it right now? I mean, he looked really good last year.
He looked like a dead eye shooter.
He shot 46% from three, and he can play two positions, and he can handle the ball.
Athletic.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that can really, really put up some numbers on this team this
might
year.
Might be able to take him with
the
your
opportunities
last pick.
There. Yeah,
you know, it might even be on waivers at the start of the season.
Justice just scares me because, like you said, he can't. It's not even the shooting.
Yeah,
he can't handle the ball.
Yeah,
and it's. I mean, he can drive to his left.
Yeah,
and he can get to the rim on a straight line drive.
Yeah.
But as a playmaker, I don't know that he'll be there right away because he just – I wouldn't trust him in a one-on-one situation. So any offensive stats he's getting is going to have to be created for him out of the offense.
And he's going to have the opportunity. And so for me, for fantasy, I look at him as someone I draft in the second half of the draft, maybe, you know, rounds 8, 9, 10, and just hope that he does take that step. If not, he might not be somebody that's worth even having on your roster, but the upside and the it's the – the combination of the upside and the opportunity.
Yeah, and I think I think the one – he kind of has upside in a couple different areas, which, like, you know, if you're looking for a guy who is going to get you assists because they're giving him the ball and stuff, yeah, maybe he's a little bit of a risk in terms of that upside. But he's a guy who plays really hard on defense, runs the floor, can board, like, probably second-best rebounder on this team, just looking at it. I mean, he's going to have a chance to do lots of the sort of little scrappy things. So I think you're right. You know, mid to late – there's not a lot of risk because he can find ways to produce for you.
All right, let's move on to the other three teams in this division. Another 48-win team that lost two-fifths of their starting lineup. The Atlanta Hawks lost Jeff Teague, traded him to Indiana in a three-team deal that landed them the
Indianapolis Pacers.
The Indianapolis Pacers landed them the number 12 pick in the draft. They also lost Al Horford to free agency in what ended up being a pretty surprising move. It sounded like at the last minute he changed his mind, opted to go to Boston. They were able to replace him. Well, actually, they signed Dwight Howard before Al Horford, which might have impacted Al Horford's
really replaced
decision.
Him.
Yeah. Dwight Howard is the starting center for this team. They also drafted Taurean Prince. They signed Chris Humphreys and Jarrett Jack for depth. This is going to be an interesting team. They've been a spread the ball around. All five guys touch it on every possession. No one superstar guy. Now, you've got Dennis Schroeder, who looks like he could be a star. You've got Dwight Howard, who
used to be a star at this
point in his career. But it's a good opportunity for him. So the first question that you have with this team, can Dennis Schroeder live up to his potential and the promise that he's shown in a smaller role? Can he turn that smaller role into a star turn the way someone like Jeff Teague did a couple of years ago on this team, or the way Reggie Jackson did on the Pistons last year? What do you guys think of Dennis Schroeder?
I think it kind of is more on the rest of the team than him. I think you've seen with him that the talent is there, the potential is there. He's lightning quick, athletic, all that.
Yeah.
But, you know, if he's going to be driving, who's he going to be dishing to on the three-point line to space the floor for him? Will Dwight Howard be cooperative in like a pick-and-roll lob kind of situation? Like, can you trust him? Or is Dwight going to kind of sit on the block and expect the ball? Because
no, it's worth saying the Hawks do think that of Dennis Schroeder. They think he can be the guy. They think he can be a top-flight point guard in the NBA. And that's why they traded Jeff Teague. They knew they had to make a decision. Jeff Teague's a free agent at the end of the season. They opted for the young guy who's shown promise. But he's really erratic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's very raw.
He's Rondo with a three-point shot to me. Like, he's got a chance to be that good, I think.
He's shown flashes of it.
Yeah, and I mean, but I agree with what Joe said. A lot of it will be how this team kind of comes back together after sort of losing. Their best player. Yeah. I mean, even though Millsap's super talented, but Horford was their guy, and Teague's been their point guard for a while, so they got to retool. And I think Dwight's going to be terrible in that system.
Okay.
I don't think he's going to be happy. I mean, other than the fact that he's home.
I was going to say, he'll be happy off the court.
Schroeder,
Schroeder's someone that in the drafts I've seen, especially with industry people, people are very excited about the opportunity to get a breakout from Dennis Schroeder. And I've seen him get drafted ahead of Reggie Jackson. Now, Reggie Jackson averaged about 19 points, 7 assists per game, 6 assists per game.
Chris is going to go to his age-old mystery box.
Right. Well, I think I've said it before. You know, you can draft Dennis Schroeder, who could be as good as Reggie Jackson.
He could be anything. He could even be Reggie Jackson.
Yeah, or you just draft Reggie Jackson, actually done it. And it seems like misplaced enthusiasm, and I think that's something that we do. And I am excited about Dennis Schroeder. I would feel better about him if I knew he was going to be going in the 6th round. Rather than 3 or 4, where he might end up going. But I do like him. I just, at the price, I might just end up passing on him.
Well, he has more upside in terms of facilitating, right? Like, Reggie Jackson is a pretty good all-around player, but I mean...
Well, Reggie can get you 35 in a night. Like, he can go off. I mean, he can have those games. He can get you 40.
He can get to the free throw line, that kind of thing.
Schroeder's not going to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, he averaged 11 points a game last year. He'll probably be somewhere in the 16, 17, 18 a game range. But he might get you 30 once or twice. But he's not going to do what Reggie can do scoring. But every other category, he can be just as good, if not better.
He is just he's also one of those guys that I could see it going wrong. He's really still just a very erratic player. He's still very raw.
Mm-hmm.
The shot looks good sometimes. And then there are times when he hits the side of the backboard on a 3 at the top of the perimeter. You know, like things just, he turns the ball over a lot. So there are concerns. We'll move on to the second question, and that's, can Dwight Howard bounce back?
Levin
loves
him.
You seem to not believe in it. Now, I will say that the Hawks have said all the right things. Paul Millsap has said this is Dwight Howard's team.
because I don't want it.
And, yeah. And if you look at the way the team is going to be built, and one of the best three-point shooters in history in Kyle Korver, Kent Bazemore, who has turned into a solid three-point shooter, Dennis Schroeder looks like a pick-and-roll ace, Paul Millsap, he's one of those guys that it's disrespectful to call him a stretch four because he can do so much, but he's become a very good three-point shooter as well from the power
forward. He can get out of the way on offense if you need him to, but he's also one of your best offensive players.
Paul Millsap's a power three.
Yeah, I think that might be a better way to put it. And then, so it does all set up that if they want to run a bunch of pick and roll with Dwight Howard, it could look really good, but Dwight Howard wants the ball in the post.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This team wants to move the ball around.
Dwight Howard is light years away from DeAndre Jordan at this point, where he's willing to move around that much.
It has the potential to be really good, but the most likely outcome is that it's just kind of awkward, like in Houston.
He's got how long is he going to be able to even stay on the floor? I mean, yeah. He's 30 years old and he's been in the league for over 10 years.
He's had the back injuries.
His points per game have gone down every year since 2010, I think, 11. I mean, this offense is a better situation because it's more of a system. So maybe he'll get more opportunities, but
maybe he won't hate the guy who's handling the ball. Look,
here's the thing: when he's healthy and he's right, he's going to average a double-double.
Yeah.
But
that's been so few and far between the last 2 years.
Right. That's the risk. And, I mean, I don't know, personally, because you guys are more fantasy. No. But, so, how high do you draft the – like, you have to assume –
He is not going high.
That's the thing.
Right. So, you have to hope, right, that he's going to be healthy. You probably draft based on the fact that he might not be, but if you know he's healthy and he's going to get a double-double, you got to at least consider him. I still don't think he's going to be very good.
There are so many young big men. There's, you know, you can even start with someone like Rudy Gobert, Karl Anthony Towns early in the draft, Hassan Whiteside, Nikola Jokic, Nikola Vucevic, Jonas Valanciunas, Andre Drummond, Nerlens Noel. You go down this list and all of a sudden Dwight Howard gets forgotten. All of a sudden you're 8 rounds into your draft, there's 16 centers off the board, and you look and Dwight Howard's there.
The gap between his name and his value is like the widest of any player.
That's where I look at it and I say, if I can get 16 and 12 out of him, a couple of blocks a game, at some point it becomes too much value for me not to draft him,
right,
even if there is the downside risk.
Yeah.
He's someone that I probably will end up
drafting.
I wouldn't be surprised if Steven
staying Adams. Away from him because they just don't like him.
They're just over it.
Be surprised if Steven Adams goes ahead of him.
That's crazy.
And for fantasy, you'd rather have Dwight Howard. So that's the situation with Dwight Howard. The last question for the Atlanta Hawks, and we can move on fairly quickly.
Bazemania.
Can Kent Bazemore, already improved, turned into a nice all-around player for them in that Damari Carroll role? Can he improve even more?
I mean, you have to think he can because he's young. He's talented. He's got the room to grow here.
Not that young.
Yeah, he's 26.
27.
Yeah.
Well, young enough to get better,
prime.
I guess.
He was on prime. He's just entering his prime.
He was on the bench for a couple of years.
He's got a baby face. He looks young.
He looks like Chance.
Well, yeah, he sat. He was the best bench celebration guy for a few years.
He can't get better at that.
No.
No. He's someone that I do like.
When you're not on the bench.
You know, can fill up the box score. I think he'll get 3 or 4 assists per game. I think he'll hit 150 threes or something like that. He's someone that I like as a, not really a breakout candidate, but just a solid, steady.
You're right. You look at their roster, and he's, you know, other than Millsap, he's the only guy on the team that can do more than one thing. They're a team of experts. They have the ball handler, they have the shooter, they have the big man, and then he can kind of fill in the space. So as long as he's getting the minutes, he's definitely going to be productive.
Move on to what I think was one of the more disappointing teams in the NBA last season, the Washington Wizards. That's why they have a new coach. Randy Whitman gone, finally.
Bye, Randy.
It's an upgrade. Scott Brooks is a good coach, but in terms of what we want to see from this team, we wanted that futuristic offense, or at least a modern offense, an offense where Bradley Beal's not chucking up contested 22-footers. I don't know if Scott Brooks can do that.
I feel like that hire, the front office there could see the future and said, we need a coach who can handle a situation that's about to blow up.
Yeah. That's fair.
And you have, I mean, you have the Wall Beal situation. You have them paying Mahimi to be the starter backup to a guy who averaged a double-double last year. They have the Morris situation. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things there. And Brooks has been in a pretty combustible situation, as we know now.
A lot of personalities.
As a coach, he's had to deal with big personalities. So that's what I was seeing in that hire. Yeah, it wasn't from a X's and O's standpoint, because we know his offense is pretty basic.
Yep. And, you know, he doesn't have Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook to create. So he's going to have to. I do always wonder with Oklahoma City, because we saw it last year where, you know, they hire a new coach, supposed to be this really creative offensive coach, and it ends up being the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how much of that is just, you have Russell Westbrook, you have Kevin Durant, don't try to overcomplicate it. This is a team that does need, you're going to need to do a little more. John Wall can create, but you need shooting on the floor. And so their big additions this offseason outside of Scott Brooks, it's really just Yamahimni. They added Trey Burke as their backup point guard. I don't think there's much optimism left for him. They lost Ine, they lost Jared Dudley. That's really it for them as well. Not a super active offseason. But the Mahimni situation is so interesting with him and Gortat. And that's the first question we'll ask is, what happens at center? Is it just going to be a situation? Can you play the two of them together?
No.
Probably not.
No way.
Yeah, and Gortat in fantasy was a situation where he was just kind of like your last-ditch center. Like, okay, all the centers are gone.
Solid center.
Yeah. Average 12 and 10, right?
He's,
yeah.
Like he's good value. That's what I mean. Because once all the name, you were listing off all those young, trendy centers, it's like, all right, Gortat gets it done. I'll take him. Mm-hmm. So that's in jeopardy because, you know, if they're trying to do a platoon or whatever they want to do, because those guys are way too big to be on the floor at the same time.
I mean, 10 rebounds a game. There's 12 guys in the league that average. He averaged 9.9.
Yeah, 9.9.
But we'll give him 10. He's one of 12 guys in the whole league that averaged 10 rebounds a game last year. Mahimi was okay.
Yeah, he was solid. He was a really solid, like, 24 minutes. And if he gets 24 minutes a game, that means Gortat gets 24 minutes a game. And all of a sudden, it's going to be
really
hard. Yeah,
now you got to stay away from both.
Yeah, that's my concern there. So really, it's a tough situation. We'll talk about Bradley Beal next. Just so much potential, but hasn't, despite the fact that he got a $104 million, $120 million contract, I think it was 5 years, $120 million for Bradley Beal, hasn't actually been worth that. Hasn't been worth the high draft pick that you've probably had to put into him in fantasy. And a big part of that is not just the performance, but the injuries. And already today, took an elbow to the head, has a concussion.
Whoa.
Breaking
news.
It's just bad luck.
Did you elbow him so you could break that
news? It was not me. No. No, it was not me. It was probably someone tall.
Just checking.
He would have to
duck. Yeah, you have to get on a step stool.
Yeah, but it just, with Bradley Beal, that's bad luck. The injuries that he's had so far that have kept him off the floor in the NBA, not really bad luck. It's a lot of recurring stress injuries with the legs, and that's always the concern with him. He said he might be on a minutes limit for the rest of his career. Can Bradley Beal live up to the potential?
Is he Brandon Roy all over again?
He
hasn't been nearly as good as Roy. Roy was a superstar for a little bit. Well, superstar on a stretch. But he was a great player.
Yeah. And Bradley Beal's been like a 17 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists.
Yeah.
Good shooting, but not as much shooting as you'd like to see. And
I think that's the biggest issue.
Yeah.
Well, it's because him and Wall don't like playing with each other, right?
Well, I think it's just...
That's what we heard this off. Like, they actually both... That's crazy that they basically said, we don't like playing with
each
other.
Your point guard's your mortal enemy. Make the shot when you're open, because you're drafted to be a Ray Allen-type player.
Exactly. And you have a guy who averaged 10 assists a game.
Yeah, like, he feeds three-pointers.
Yeah,
that's
he's supposed
to
be Ray Allen. He's Evan Fournier so far. You know, like, that's the more... That's the comp that I go with, is that, like... Evan Fournier was better than Bradley Beal last season. Evan Fournier is a good player, but Bradley Beal was supposed to be a star.
And he was supposed to be a two-way player, too. Yeah. He was supposed to be able to defend, and the injuries, I mean, I don't know what the situation is with their I mean, if he's healthy, you gotta take a chance on him because he can really score, and if he can put it together, then he can be a 22, 23-point night guy, and he has to be for them to be good.
Yeah.
But the injuries are just so hard to overlook.
Yeah, he's someone that I've probably won't end up drafting, because you're going to have to get him in the 4th, 5th, 6th round, and I don't know if the risk-reward is there for him. But like you said, the breakout potential is there. Another guy who we've seen be very good I think 3 years ago,
especially,
and hasn't been that good since, is Markieff Morris. And the start of the season in Phoenix was an abject disaster, and it was always going to be. After they traded Marcus Morris, he said, "I want to be traded." He didn't tell a local reporter. He told someone from Phoenix or Philly. You know, that was a personal. He didn't want to be there, and you could look at his shot chart, and not even watching the game, his reactions. You could look at his shot chart and tell he didn't want to be there because he was just jacking up bad shots. He got to Washington, the shot selection improved a little bit, but he didn't really take a step forward. Is this a situation with Markieff Morris where we think he has any potential left to build on, or is he kind of what he is?
I think he's what he is. I mean, he's a really good scorer, one-on-one from the elbow, like in spots, but when you look at it for fantasy, I mean, he doesn't really do anything super well.
Well, that's the thing, is when things are going right for him, he could.
It's the mentality for him. If he's in it, he can put up huge numbers.
And across the board, he could be like a poor man's Draymond Green. You know, he's a decent passer. He's a decent shooter for a four, although not as good as you want.
I don't see that happening unless Marcus ends up in Washington or Markieff ends up in Detroit and they're back together.
Like John Wall gets traded and this team is awful because like...
And then he just has to get...
It's John Wall's team.
All right, let's do it. Kelly Oubre and Otto Porter for Marcus Morris. Let's do it.
Otto's the guy on that team that I think could be your sleeper for that. I mean, he's a guy who's going to play a lot of minutes and can do a lot of things.
Yeah,
and he puts up numbers across the board defensively too. I mean, he had a couple like 15 rebound games last year. I mean, he could be a guy that if he stays healthy again. Yeah. I think he had some injuries.
Yeah, he's had hip injuries in his career. Yeah, had a torn labrum in his hip as a rookie.
But if he can knock down his outside jumper a little bit more consistently, he could be a really good player for them and a guy who just sort of fits the role for them as a. You know, 3-and-D is the buzzword that people like to use for that position. But he can play like that Damari role when he was in Atlanta.
Someone that 9th, 10th round probably can provide some pretty nice value.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Move on to the last team, and it's such a weird
boy.
Team.
What's going on here,
Orlando? Well, this is one of those situations where people talk about just tear it down. When fans of teams like Heat fans, I see. Well, you just have to tear it down. You just got to get draft picks. You got to draft well. The Magic have drafted pretty well. They haven't had any real outright busts. You know, they traded Dwight Howard and they got Nikola Vucevic out of it. They got a 20-10 center, and they kept drafting. They kept getting talented players, and then all of a sudden you look at it and it's like this team doesn't make sense.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be a vision. Like they're just compiling assets.
And then so they finally tried to kind of put all those assets together and get
trying to streamline.
And so at the draft they traded Victor Oladipo, Ersan Ilyasova, and the number 11 pick, which was Dante Sabonis, for Serge Ibaka. And it's a trade where they're trying to consolidate, make their roster make sense a little more. They basically picked, I don't even know, they just didn't see Victor Oladipo making the next step, especially as a point guard. Now you look at the starting lineup and you've got Alfred Payton, Evan Fournier, Aaron Gordon, Serge Ibaka, Nikola Vucevic. You can see a basketball team there. You can see shooting with Serge Ibaka and Evan Fournier. You can see a pick and pop with Alfred Payton and Serge Ibaka, a pick and roll with Nikola Vucevic. You've got shooting actually from both big positions. Serge Ibaka can cover up for Nikola Vucevic. It all starts to make sense. They have roles. I'm just not sure they're actually good.
Well, I also think this is, at least for the front court, I think at the center position, this is where you got to stay away from these guys because Bismack Biyombo is the highest paid player on the team, so he's going to play, and they can't play him and Vooch together.
Yeah.
So where do the minutes go? We won't know. It might be game by game. It just might be whoever's playing better, whoever has the better matchup.
Yep.
Serge is going to play.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, like if Biz is playing bad and Vucevic is playing bad, you can play Serge at the five and Aaron Gordon at the four because Aaron Gordon's more of a four anyway.
Which might be their best look.
Their front court is a mess. Yeah. Like in terms of minutes, like they have the talent. But in terms of minutes, it's hard to say that one or the other is going to put up big numbers.
Could be a stay away situation.
Serge could be an absolute stud this year because he's the best player on their team. I think he's the most experienced and he's the most talented probably right now.
And that's
on both ends of the floor. But what position is he going to play? Is he going to stay at the four? Is he going to move to the five and pull, go
shooting
small?
The one thing I do want to point out is you were talking about Al Jefferson earlier.
He's arguably the second best shooter on OKC last year.
I think he's the second best shooter on this team.
Well, no. Mario Hezonja.
Maybe.
Mario Hezonja is going to be good.
I hope so.
I like.
He's super fun.
You can probably pick him up after drafts, right? No one's taking that guy, but he's going to be. I think he's going to be really good.
Yeah.
The one thing I do want to point out is you were talking about Al Jefferson earlier, and when they got him to play defense, it was by saying you're going to get 20-25 shots a game. Yep. Serge Ibaka had the opposite situation in Oklahoma City. They were saying, be the defensive anchor. Be the star of our defense. And if you get four shots a game, just be happy with it. And that's tough. He's human.
Well, that's why he went from a around-the-rim guy when he came into the league. He developed his shot because he knew his opportunities were going to come if he could space the floor and get either long rebounds, driving kicks, stuff like that. He had to develop, and he did it. I mean, to his credit, he can shoot.
But eventually it became... It got too far for him, I think. Yeah. He wanted to be more of a part of the offense, and his role just kept getting more diminished. He kept moving further away from the basket.
Yeah.
He has an opportunity here in Orlando to be – he'll never be the number one option on an offense.
It's interesting.
But he could get 15 shots a game here.
Because that's the problem, as you say, he can shoot, but it's like statistically, and especially for fantasy, he really isn't that good, or he wasn't the last year. Mm-hmm. Because he's under 50% field goals for a big man. That's bad because
he's taking
him
out.
Yeah. But he's still under 33% from three last year because he's so big. So it's kind of like when you're trying to do...
A little worst of both worlds.
Exactly. Like he needs to sort of be more efficient in one spot and less trying to do... You know, now he doesn't have to get out of Westbrook and Durant's way. So that's really something going for him.
I just think looking at their team that Fournier is the only guy like... Like you said, Evan Fournier is a good offensive player, and he's going to score a lot of points. He's the only guy to me that I would be confident because the rest of that roster, because they could either be surprisingly good or they could be awful, there's going to be movement. I mean, look.
Green's going to get traded in February. That's what always happens.
Well, I mean, look.
Someone's going to give up a first-round pick for Jeff Green because it's an NBA yearly tradition. Some team is going to convince themselves they are a Jeff Green away from a championship.
I mean, what's the GM? He's...
Rob Hennigan.
He's bringing in, you know,
Oklahoma City
Serge
guys,
Ibaka, the stretch four formerly known as Jeff Green from Oklahoma City. DJ Augustine was really good for them. I mean, he's just like trying to take the pieces that he remembers being good and throw them in there and see if they fit. But I mean, there's so many guys that you just don't know. Like Jeff Green's a guy who isn't very good anymore, but
he's going to demand minutes and shots.
Exactly. So who can you consistently take? DJ Augustine is going to play. He might be the best shooter on their team.
Yeah,
but he's going to play. He's their backup point guard, or CJ Watson if he's healthy. But I mean,
they're kind of just a different version of what they were last year, which is like a bunch of redundant.
Jody Meeks probably not going to be healthy for the start of the season.
Yeah.
It is worth noting that you have a new head coach, Frank Vogel, and you know, not considered an offensive guru. That was Larry Bird's kind of justification for getting rid of Frank Vogel, was that the offense didn't improve the way he wanted, which, look, man, you added Monte Ellis and thought that your offense was going to start, like, spacing the floor. I don't know what you thought, but Frank Vogel has talked about Aaron Gordon specifically as someone he thinks could be the Paul George on this team. He's not going to be the scorer that Paul George is, but he thinks of him as kind of a secondary creator on a team that needs it. Elfrid Payton is the point guard, but not a great shooter, hasn't been able to build on the promise he showed in college. Aaron Gordon has a chance to really break out. But like you said, not clear he's playing the right position.
Well, yeah, and it's hard to be it depends on what way he's going to be a creator. Mm-hmm. Is he going to be a creator as a four where he kind of plays through the post sometimes and then stretches? Yeah. Or if he thinks he's going to be like Paul George, part of being a creator is, it's like you were talking about earlier, Joe, like the threat of being able to knock down an open shot changes the way people have to guard you. So you're not going to be able to create much if a guy can just play 5 feet off of you all night. And what are you creating? They're going to let him shoot. If he's trying to handle the ball and do what Paul George does or that type of role, which he's not that,
but
that's going to be a problem unless something crazy happened in the offseason and he makes this great jump, a Kemba Walker type 7% in a season jump from three. But I mean, I don't see that happening.
The comp everyone goes to when he got drafted was Blake Griffin. I think when you look at the way,
so much skinnier,
well, doesn't handle body the ball wise
nearly as well.
But Blake doesn't. Yeah, I was going to say they're both kind of face up dribbling fours if they're fours, and so if he can get that sort of, you know, 17 foot that Blake has kind of gotten just to keep people honest.
But the thing
honest,
is that works because Blake's a four. You have a shooter playing the three.
And he also, Blake, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I haven't seen enough of Aaron Gordon, but like Blake, you knew right away that he had a natural ability to pass the ball. Yeah. Like he sees the floor from that stretch
Gordon
four spot.
Shows,
I don't know.
It's more like surprises you when he dribbles and passes. And you're like, oh, okay, he's a little better. Yeah, but you're right. It's not like innate necessarily.
Right. Yeah, he's.
Orlando's.
I didn't know that. That's what Vogel was saying about him. That's an interesting.
Orlando's because, like you mentioned, Mario Hezonja, you know, probably going to be behind Aaron Gordon, probably going to be behind Jeff Green if he plays the three. But there's an opportunity for him.
And he'll be the backup two also.
The backup two, he can handle the ball. He can create.
Yeah, he can score and he's tough.
The fully realized version of Mario Hezonja is someone that's a very interesting prospect. And I mean, he's super fun as well. Just like his personality.
Yeah, he's got attitude.
Like,
he's
dunks
tough
on people and like laughs at them.
Oh yeah, but he doesn't take anything from. I mean, when I went up to Orlando last year to watch them play, or not necessarily watch them play, but watching him play like in games where, because Skiles wasn't playing him.
No,
like Skiles wasn't messing with him, and you could see there was
he's the least Scott Skiles player in NBA history.
But when he played, you could just tell, like, it didn't matter who was on the floor against him. He didn't care. He's just trying to get buckets. And he's fun. It's fun. I mean, and he's super talented. I mean, he's even if he stays coming off the bench and only plays, he's going to have these games now and then where he's going to get you, like, 15 points in 12 minutes.
Yeah, I think you look at, like, Zach LaVine, what he did, you know, kind of just in spurts where he's super excited. And those guys are fun to draft, bottom line. It's like,
and he has a chance,
you're kind of
and he has a chance to be a knockdown shooter.
Yeah.
Like, his numbers don't show it from last year as a knockdown shooter, but he's got that.
Yeah.
He's 21 years old. I mean, he's got a chance to be pretty good. I think out of necessity, he could be a sleeper for that team just because, again, somebody's got to be a wing scorer for that team.
And so when you look at, we'll wrap up Orlando, we'll wrap up the podcast. Now, when you look at Orlando, it just, yet again, as has been the case for a few years, there's too many questions coming into the season to feel super great about anyone for fantasy. But if you do feel great about anyone, Evan Fournier, I think, is the guy. He's someone that probably going to go after Bradley Beal.
Who's
Beal,
Evan
probably,
Fournier? I got to look him up?
Do not Google it.
Search him on.
Do not Google Evan Fournier.
Can I Bing him?
Do not Google Fournier.
Can I Bing him? Ask Jeeves? Sorry.
Yeah, it's fantastic. he's the guy that has no. There's no question about what his role is. There's no. He might average 20 points per game on this team with what they need from him. The shooting that they need. The a bit of a playmaker can run the point for stretches. I think he's the one guy on this team that once whoever drafts Bradley Beal in your league drafts him, wait like 10 picks and take Evan Fournier and get a better version of Bradley Beal. And that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, and if you're building a team categories, you know, you're looking at a shooter, 2-3-point per game. You can basketball reference him, by the way.
Yes.
Don't Google him. But
go to basketball reference,
go up
to his top, to the top of his page.
Yeah, don't Google in parentheses.
That is his nickname.
But you're looking at the Kyle Korver, like the specialist to build out your three-pointer. Like, why not take him? You know, he's not that volume, but he's got room to grow in
other
areas.
And he does everything else well enough for his position. So Evan Fournier is a player that I really like in the middle rounds. Guys, it's going to do it for this episode. My weekend starts now. I'm going to take off right after this, so it's great. I'm really excited. But Joseph, Mr. Levin, thanks so much for being on.
Thanks for having
me. It was a nice debut.
Tell Michael Jordan we said hi when you had lunch with him.
Next time you text Michael Jordan.
Oh, he's listening. He's going to listen.
Mike.
He's going to listen.
Next time,
Mike, can tell him yourself.
Next time you Skype with Michael Jordan in your weekly
FaceTime
sessions.
FaceTime.
Let him know we say hi.
I will.
He promises that he'll get him on the podcast this
at some point. At some point.
Joe Pulido.
Hey, man.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, it was fun.
Missed you. It's been 2 weeks.
You know, it's busy times in the CBS world with the old football, the old pear-shaped ball.
That's what we're going to try to do for the next few weeks is at least one time a week. I would like to do two, but that's going to be tough with how busy we are. But
just one man podcast, man. Just come in here.
We are, yeah. People want to hear me
just riff.
People want to hear me stumbling and stammering.
I want to see where that ends up. You'll be
people want to literally be able to hear the sweat pouring off of me as I'm trying to do that. That's not good for anybody. What I do want to say is, if you like the show, please subscribe. Go to iTunes, leave us a review, let us know that you like the show. That's good for us. And definitely subscribe if you have any questions about the season, about who you need to draft, who you need to keep, what you need to do. Fantasy basketball at CBSI is the way to do it. That's going to do it for our show. We will be back next week. The season starts in 26 days.
OMG.
The NBA season starts in 26 days. It is coming up fast. So, Joseph, we'll have you back on throughout the season. You'll be a featured
guest. You gotta call
him
Levin. There's already a Joseph on
Levin?
The show.
Joseph Levin.
Joe, you'll be here every week. Hopefully. And we'll see you next time. Thanks so much for listening.